Facility Committee for March 5th to order. Roll call, we have all the supervisors in attendance. Both of our youth and governance are here. And ask for approval of the minutes of the previous meeting, which would be the minutes from February 13th.
I'll move to approve.
And I'll second it.
Moved and seconded to approve the minutes of the previous meeting. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Youth and governance? Thank you. Chairman, committee members, supervisors, youth and government comments. This evening, we, as we had begun at our previous meeting, discussion on the Katy Park project and the plans and recommendations submitted. This evening, we're going to have a short presentation on the water levels at the park. If you remember what we discussed at our previous meeting, there was two plans submitted, Plan A and Plan B, and so we're going to have a presentation on that under our parks agenda. Any other committee members?
I received some feedback from high school students, and you wouldn't think high school students read the paper or really focus on the news, because that's not what we do. But I had a couple of high school students from the Central High School golf team approach me because they knew I had to sit on this committee, and they said they were kind of disappointed that we were, considering closing down the Red 9 course, and partially because they enjoy playing on the field and they think it's nice, and so it's just kind of the interest of the youth that we would keep open that Red 9 because they do use it for their golf team and for different things. So that's kind of what I received from some youth at the high school. So I thought I'd share that with this committee tonight.
Thank you, Dustin. And when we get to new business golf, I would hope that you would participate then and give some further thoughts that those people have.
Sure.
Thank you. Any other committee members? But now we'll move on to citizens' comments. Any citizens that wish to address the committee, we'll give you approximately 5 minutes to have any thoughts that you have on anything that we have on or off our agenda. We would only ask that you first give your name and address, and that's it. Any citizens wish to?
I would like to. My name is Daniel Noonan. My address is P.O. Box 868, New Munster. We've got a P.O. box out there. I don't remember the other one, my street address.
I know where it is.
I'd like to say a few words on the subject of the Red course. I have played at Brightondale for over 30 years. I'm a lifetime resident of Kenosha County. I've also worked both on the maintenance crew and in the clubhouse for 6 years at my time with the county. So I do know a little bit on what's going on with the golf course. We as taxpayers look to the committee of the golf course to make decisions for the betterment of the community. It is my point of view that it would be a great loss to shut down the Red 9. It is part of the community that we have, and we don't need to take it away. Does it need maintenance on the golf course and the sprinkler system? Yes, without a doubt. But that doesn't mean we need to tear it down. I do raise a few questions about the analysis gathered and how they were gathered for how many nine-hole rounds that were played. There are no starters that are out on the course keeping track of who comes through. The only way that you could really keep it would be to do a total nine holes sold of golfers and then divide it by five, because there's five courses out there, and I don't think that is a fair assessment of the Red 9. So I don't trust the numbers that were in that analysis. I feel that the Red 9 is an underused golf course of the county. Many different ways could be used for it, such as make it a discount 9 for family use. Year-round availability to play golf there. Granted, this winter, I've played over 25 rounds of golf from November 1st until now. The golf course is open just that 9. It doesn't damage the course. There's no maintenance needed. You're just making money. These are just a few examples of how you could make money instead of losing money on that course. I really believe with an aggressive marketing plan on that, that in the season of 2012, that the Red would be an apparent asset to the golf course. In the end, I feel that more time and facts should be gathered before any decision is made.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to speak on our citizens' comments? If not, citizens' comments are closed. We'll move on to golf and highways. First thing on the agenda there is to review the Katy Parklands Master Plan. Hopefully everyone brought their copies. And Ray, you're going to address someone here?
Sure. I was just confirming his last name. I knew it was Irish, but I forgot it was O'Leary. It's Mark O'Leary from JJR. He was the lead environmental or ecological scientist on the project. And so some of the questions that were brought up at the last committee meeting had to do with the lake level, raising it and lowering it, and what effect that would have, and what the pros and cons as it relates to the overall restoration of the site, what that would do. And Mark is really the guy to speak to these things. He did all the detailed work, pulled everything together. He put a short PowerPoint together, which is really, it's a review of some of the slides that were in the original one, so they're not new. If you've got your books, probably you'll actually be able to follow along. I'm just not sure if he's got page numbers that correlate to our master plan. But in any event, he was going to walk you through kind of a basic overview and then just Q&A.
Right. And we can work for the committee. It starts on page 17. If you're looking at A and B, if that's where you're going to start.
I'm actually not going to start there. I'm going to start at old aerial photos, and I don't actually know where they fall.
He does cover, though, the A and B.
Yeah. Well, that's why he's here.
Right.
So we don't want to spend a lot of time on other things.
This is basically, the presentation is less than, it's probably 2 minutes, 10 slides, about 5 minutes.
Oh, geez.
Yeah,
you thought you'd do better than that.
is better longer or shorter?
Hold on. There's going to be questions and discussions. So.
Well, I can just blast through these and then basically just try to set the stage as far as how we came up to A and B.
Yeah. Definitely.
I'd like to stand, but I don't want to stand in front of the slide, so I hope you won't mind me sitting here.
You're fine.
So we started looking at the site. Should we turn those lights down? Is that?
There we go.
When we first looked at the site, you can see where the lake is, and you can see where the lake is not. We tried to get an understanding of what the site was and what was there, and use that as a way to inform what we could restore it to. And we also looked at the pre-settlement vegetation communities, and you can see by 1939, most of it was gone, except for the woodlands and savannas on some of the edges there. And keep in mind that big dark spot, because that was all the remnant wetland habitat in the original pre-settlement plant communities. Then we looked at the regional context and tried to figure out how it fits in with Munster Park and the contributing watershed. And then we came up with general objectives in conjunction with the Blue Ribbon Committee and others that we wanted to restore as much of the indigenous plant communities as possible and practical. We looked at changing the lake water levels for reasons that we'll go into here shortly, and thought about restoring some of the historic communities that are completely gone, like that tamarack bog. So we came to this consensus master plan, and what this master plan shows is if we do lower the water levels, you get this darker band is where the shallower water is, where you have the emergent plant communities. And you have the mesic woodland, the dry prairies, and the mesic prairies. And these are kind of the what the communities would look like in the upland areas, the wetland sedge meadow areas, the upland savanna areas, the tamarack bog. I don't have a picture of the emergent shore. So this is the first alternative one, or alternative A, that I think you were talking about. And we've got dry prairie in this zone, mesic prairie, emergent wetland at the edge of these open water areas. And you can see along the lake, there is very little habitat at all. It's just blue going up into dry prairie, or blue or in a savanna, or blue going up into dry prairie. And when you're looking at that, you know, there's some problems associated with that. One is you can just kind of see on the edges here, even in this rendering, where you have some bare soil areas where the water is causing erosion. You also see this emergent band of vegetation on the boardwalk here. Well, that doesn't really exist because the water comes so close up to the edge and it's so steep and deep. Another example, you can kind of see how that eroded banks are. And again, you have a big emergent area, but the topography doesn't really allow that really big emergent area. So what we're thinking is, what happens if you lower the water levels? How does that solve any problems? And it does. A couple of things, and it's kind of hard to tell, is these are some of the areas where the topo comes real tight up against. Everyone can see these lines, and the closer together the lines are, the steeper the slope is. And you can see how some of those steep lines, I lost my mouse, those steep lines come right up against the water edge. Here, it happens in here. These are also areas where you have erosion along the banks. And part of that is because you've got this wind coming across the lake, and there's nothing protecting that bank from erosion. You also notice that by lowering the lake levels, you do get some emergent zones in here, in this area, protecting the bank there, and especially in this area. So that's creating that emergent habitat, aesthetically, habitat-wise, water quality-wise, that you weren't getting before. So it changes the footprint. It also probably will shrink the size of the wetland on this size, or at least change the community from a deep water community to more of a wet prairie community. So in summary, the pros and cons of lowering or keeping it up, the reasons we proposed lowering it was you get that planting shelf, you get that habitat along the edge, and Dan and I were just chatting before the meeting, and he was recalling how as a kid, he just volunteered. He used to fish from this area. He said, "You really can't wade the bank because it's so steep. I mean, as soon as you put your foot in your water, you're in deep water." So it's a problem fishing. It's also a problem when it's that deep, you don't get any of the vegetation growing because it's too deep. You need that shallower area. By lowering it, you also provide areas to plant plants that will provide shore protection of the bank. So you can put the plants in the water in a way that will protect the bank from the waves and reduce the erosion. You get habitat along the shore. When you have open water with no plants, it really limits the type of fish habitat you can get in there and the bird habitat. So it allows another type of planting community to grow within the lake. You get water quality benefits associated with the plants taking up the nutrients in the lake. Aesthetically, you can create those conditions where if you have a boardwalk in this area, you do have wetland plants on either side. And then you also have the issue of stormwater volume. If you recall the very first picture, we had an image of the contributing watershed up in this area. And when you lower the lake levels, that allows when storms come, that they ultimately get into this lake, and then that lake can hold and retain that water before it discharges into the Fox River. So shortly in summary, what are the cons of that? Well, if you lower this lake level, this lake level is controlling in some degree the water levels in this system right here. So you'll be required to put in a series of water control structures here so you don't get this water wanting to cut the bank and immediately get down to that level. But it's also an opportunity because it allows you to manipulate the water level in these wetlands more independently than the lake. It may or may not require a new outlet at the dam. Right now the outlet is, 12-inch pipe, John?
Yes.
And it takes quite a bit of time to empty the lake that way. If you really wanted to have more control over it, you'd have to put a different and bigger water control structure in there. Or, if you didn't want to spend any money, you could just siphon it. So put a pipe over the top and siphon it when you need it to. This is an unknown, how it would affect the regional water table. We didn't look at that. There are probably studies that have been done or visual footprints looking at old aerial photographs or maybe anecdotal information or maybe guys drilling wells in the area that could tell how that would affect the regional water table. And I'm just talking the very shallow regional water table. What I suspect is it's not going to go much beyond your property in here as far as what that effect could be, if at all. You just don't know. A cost is a factor because if you lower it, you have to do something. You don't want to lower it and then cause an erosion problem right here. So as soon as you lower that, say you drop it 3 feet. Well, there is a narrow culvert somewhere in here just that the trail goes over, and that's kind of controlling the water levels. But if you get a big random one that blows through here, and you blow out that culvert, this water level is going to want to equalize and get to this water level. And it'll do that by blowing a hole in the bank. So that's something that you ought to address. The timing relates to the cost. If you want to open the park right away, are you going to want to have to do this stuff up front? I mean, it immediately requires you to spend some money on the thing. You also have a large EM is emergent. Emergent zone is like what cattails and phragmites grow in. It's a larger zone to manage. What I forgot to put on the pro here is you have a phragmites problem out there right now, which you're controlling. Yeah, and does everyone know what phragmites is? It's a really tall, reed-like plant that grows 12, 14 feet high, and it's noxious. It takes over everything to the exclusion of everything else. And one of the ways to kill it, and actually one of the ways to manage most wetland weeds, is through flooding. So if you lower the water level, you have an opportunity to really attack those weeds. And then if you bring it up a little bit, you have a chance to keep those weeds out. So it gives you flexibility on how you manage the weeds within the lake itself. But you are creating a larger emergent wetland zone, which, you know, you'll have to keep an eye on. If purple loosestrife gets in there, and the cattails or phragmites, you'll have to manage that more so than if you just have water coming up to the edge. So I don't know if I use my 5 minutes or more or less, but hopefully.
Oh, you can take more, but you'll have more.
That's all I have in terms of a presentation. I'm happy to entertain questions.
Yeah, the reason we asked you here, it's my belief that this is the first piece of the puzzle. And you mentioned in your presentation that, if you want to open this, and you do have to deal with this. And when I say the first piece of the puzzle, I'm talking about the possibility of a dive team putting in the dive ramp and the boardwalk and thing. We have to know what the water levels are, naturally, before we do any of those things. Now, we can open it like we're talking about this summer for our hiking trails and things, but for this committee to make a recommendation and to analyze and to adopt some of these plans, we need to have a rough idea what we're going to do with that water level. You touched on it briefly. The reason I brought this up as a major point is the water table. The water table in that area, and I know you guys didn't study that deeply, but hardly any of it is surface water. You talk about this waterway and the need for culverts and things, but it's mostly spring water in that lake. Mm-hmm. And we are going to be directly affecting adjacent property owners with what we do. There's three ponds off of our property that I know of that are greatly affected by when we do pump that lake down. Two of the property owners have contacted me constantly when we have our spillway running. We've got a water release that comes out of a pipe, I'm sure you saw. And if we drop that lake, their ponds go down 2 and 3 feet at a crack. So those are people that are greatly interested in what we do with our water level. Now, two of those ponds, possibly three, two for sure were done after that lake was formed. But that lake has been there now. We took it over, say, 10 years ago, and it was with an earthen dam going further back than that. When the earthen dam blew out during a major storm, the steel sheeting was put in, and then the current lake level was formed.
Yeah.
So at least two of those ponds were there before that, one since. But there's yep, and then there's another one if you go over there. Could be that one. But that's something that we have to consider, because we've got some people that are going to be directly affected by what we do. And the other concern, then I'll open it up to the committee's questions, is the cost of creating some of the wetland areas that you're talking about. And as you know and I know, that's very expensive.
Well, it depends what you're talking about.
Right. But our soils aren't there. We're basically gravel to water. So if you do create areas to adventure and create bog areas and things, they're going to have to be created.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to just do it with what's there. So that's something that we have to look at also. So with that, I'll open it up to the committee.
Can I just kind of clarify some points you made, or at least add some of that stuff? One of them is that if you put water control structures in here, you have there's a chance that you would be less inclined to drop the water levels in these upland lakes. And I would argue that if you had this earthen dam blow out, was it associated with a storm?
Yes.
And that suggests there's a lot of surface water coming. So clearly there's groundwater in the system. You don't get these big expanses of hydric soils that are very deep like these are without a strong groundwater component. But clearly the fact that a storm came and blew out your dam, there's a lot of water coming off of this watershed that is ultimately going through this pond. So that doesn't necessarily mean that if we put these water control structures in here, like we talked about, that wouldn't control the water levels of those lakes.
What type of water control structure are you talking about?
Simple stopgate. I mean, an agri drain is what the farmers use all the time.
It's yeah.
It's basically it's a pipe that dumps into a manhole that has a stop log in it, which you can put dip boards in to control how much water goes in and out. They're about, 1,500. Farmers will put them in for $800 a piece. If you do it, it'll be $2,000 a piece because you have a trail on it and stuff. You'll probably need one, two, maybe three structures in here at, $2,000 a piece-ish. We may have had an estimate in there that was different. I think there was one. I don't remember what it was exactly.
But there's no water that comes through there.
Well, I think there does. I mean, this is...
It's very rare. I mean, it certainly dries up in the summertime.
Oh, it probably does.
Yeah.
But this is the watershed. I mean, that's all that water goes through that area.
Yeah.
So, that means anything that falls on this area is going into the ground or over the ground and out through here and ultimately out through that lake.
What I'm saying is I believe most of it goes into the ground. And the whole west side of that lake is full of the springs. And being on that property, and Mr. Rudy could verify, that gets many times of the year dry. There's no water there at all.
Yeah.
So we'll open it up to the committee here.
Mr. Chairman,
yes, sir.
A couple questions. Part of this will be for you and part of it for the other gentleman. So you're telling us it's a few thousand dollars to block off to lower the lake, or how many thousands are we talking about? And was any of this included in the original budget? Because it does talk about some of the wetlands, emerging wetlands, for $232,000. Is that part of this at all?
The water control structures would have been in the cost estimate of this.
Okay. So it's not adding additional cost?
Not this one. Not the one at the end of the water control structures up here. We didn't cost rebuilding this dam. Which I don't think you need to rebuild the dam. It's just a matter of how quickly and how much you want to be able to manipulate that.
Page 59's got those cost summaries.
That's what we're looking at. I wasn't 100% sure, looking at the cost, if this has already been included in the cost of the park, or if it wasn't, or if this is now more additional costs that we're looking at.
This shall be included in the cost.
That's why I wanted to double check.
But again, it does not include changing the control structure of that dam. You really don't have to. It's just bigger opening means you can control it faster. I don't remember how long it took you, John, to get it over 3 feet. When you were opening it, but it took a long, long time, didn't it?
Yeah, but we didn't. I don't think we cranked it wide open either. So.
Oh, okay. That's actually a measurable. I mean, it's 12 inches. You know what volume's going through. I don't know how long it'll take, but it's something we can calculate.
That's 2 points. Figure out.
Fred's agreeing.
Is there some degree of discussion about the swale area to the west of this lake? And as to its direct effect upon the lake level, I mean, I've heard that there'd be surface water feeding in there. I've heard that the water table might have percolation through. Is there a consensus, or is there still, it's kind of up in the air as to how that swale area, in fact, affects the lake level? Do we know?
How this swale area affects the lake level?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think the lake level controls the elevation of this swale area.
So it's vice versa.
Yeah, I think that's how it is right now. And that's why we were proposing that if we wanted to manipulate this hydrology independent of the lake, you have to lower the lake and put some water control structures in here. And another benefit that I didn't have in there is when you lower the lake, let's say we just do it 3 feet, just for sake of argument, that then it gives you room to lower this whole wetland zone, if you so choose, for weed management. And one of the key tools, the most important tools that you have for managing wetland vegetation and keeping costs down, is being able to manipulate the water levels. Because what happens is when you drop them, often your weeds can generate and come up because they need that mudflat habitat to germinate, but they won't germinate underwater. So one of the things you can do, you have a lot of frag and cattails in this thing, is you could, if you lower the lake, that would allow you to lower this whole area, manage the weeds, and then put those stop gates back in again, get that water level back up again, and flood it out before the weeds come in. So it gives you more flexibility to manage those levels.
Well, let me carry on just so I'm clear. Which is lower, the lake or the swale?
The lake is lower, and I don't know exactly if they're directly tied, but I think my understanding is that the lake goes back into about here. I think there's a little culvert right there. And then there's about a grade higher elevation change. That culvert under the trail keeps the water propped up another foot or so. And there may be something back here that we never found. But ultimately, the lake is the biggest controller of the water levels of what's happening in here.
What's your sense of that, Dennis? Do you have a sense as to which is higher, hydrology of the swale in that lake?
Oh, I'm sure this is downstream.
The lake is downstream.
The lake is downstream.
Yeah.
Definitely, and I guess my only other question I would have is these stops that you're talking about putting in.
Right.
They won't control ground or subsurface water at all.
No.
You're talking about surface water.
Right.
The concerns of these landowners is groundwater. And it's documented when we drop that thing, 3 feet, Bears drops 3 feet. No ifs, ands, or buts. So we have to decide as a county committee and the county itself, how do we deal with that? We're not going to do it with planks and boards. That's why this is such a major decision. Because if we play with the hydrology there and drop that lake, those landowners are directly affected. There's no way to stop it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That may be true, but I'm not certain it's true. Because if you, the groundwater is still coming from ultimately surface water. And it's coming from surface water that comes in here. And the water is just, you know, there's a pretty good pitch up in these areas. It's a lot higher. And the water is basically daylighting or coming out of the ground in these areas. Mm-hmm. So if this is the low point, that's where all the groundwater is going to go to. But if we put a control structure in over here, you've then perched that, you potentially perched that water up above it. Now, without doing a hydrologic study, it's impossible to tell for sure.
Right, and I don't need the study because the guy drives over and tells me. His pond dropped 3 feet, so I don't need the study. What I'm saying is it's not Kenosha County's fault that these people dug their ponds. They dug them after the lake was there. But we play with 3 feet of water, we directly affect them. So that's not something we even need a study over. You know, I can introduce John, and John knows the neighbors that have the ponds. So this is where the big concern comes in. We have to either say we're going to do this or we're not. We don't need to study it.
Right. I just want to say, so if we do maintain the water levels, it sounds like, you know, if there was something that could be done to control erosion, and is there any plant communities that could be introduced, good plant communities that could be introduced to, along the shore, even though there is a steep, I know on that northern bank, yeah, because I've been in there a few times too, where there's big ravines and it's rutted up and stuff. Are there things that can be done to that to help preserve that shoreline and, you know, introduce a positive kind of a plant community that would help with the erosion as well as potentially if it's going out into the lake, you know, with the fish habitat or other wildlife? Is there stuff that you can do with that?
Rock, hard armoring.
So hard armoring is
okay. Yeah, that's really, there's, you know, with those waves banging against it all the time, there's a very limited, there's no way to break the energy of the waves with, when you have deep water coming up against the shore.
Yes?
I want to go back to this question. I'm taking away from this so far that there may be, this is where I want you to weigh in on this, there may be a way that if there were a series of check valves put in between the swale and the lake to manage that water, that if the lake were dropped down, it may not as adversely affect those ponds upstream.
Correct.
Is that part of your contention, or is it not?
Yes.
And the cost of these is what? $1,000 a piece, ballpark, roughly?
Somewhere between $1,000 and $5,000. I mean, I don't know what they are exactly.
Well, it may be worthwhile, if that's the extent of it, to consider putting them in just for management purposes, regardless, we can control the flow between the two. And then as a provocative test, take your lake down and see, does it affect these ponds or does it not? I mean, that should at least be, I would think, a logical course.
Yes?
I guess my question is, we're talking about dropping the lake levels and so on and so forth. John, I got a question for you. And Dennis, too, we talked about this lake being, you know, one of the premier attributes of this park. We talked about scuba diving, we talked about fishing, we assume some swimming in this lake, so on and so forth. I guess I'm trying to get a better view of what are we looking to do with this lake, and if we drop the lake level down, is that going to affect what we're looking to do to help the people in the community use this lake?
Yeah, that's exactly why.
That's my question. I could care less about the lake levels and the groundwater. I mean, to me, it's just...
That's exactly why I wanted this to be what I believe is the most important aspect of the whole park.
Sure, I agree.
We decide one way or the other. Is it going to be an environmentalist, you know, bog area and shrink the lake, or the way it is right now.
And is it going to be a deterrent then if we do drop the lake level, shop valves or not, now you're spending this, I understand where we're getting as far as controlling the water, but is it going to deter for the betterment of the community to use this lake? You know, that's really my question. Can I get some feedback?
Well, I don't think it's going to affect the activities that we have planned there. You know, it probably add to the fishing habitat all along the thing as well. You know, like Mark said, to be able to get the plant life to get a foothold along there and stop that erosion. And as far as dropping it 3 feet for the scuba divers, I believe it's close to 60 foot deep out in the center, so that it wouldn't affect that. As far as what goes on with that lake, you know, I think that lowering it is a good thing as long as it doesn't affect the neighbors.
See, what you have right here, where you've got this boardwalk going through the swelling community, that doesn't exist. It can't exist without either lowering the lake levels or filling in the lake to raise the bottom. You know, that really can't exist in here, that type of community.
I think it comes right down to the neighbors. Mm-hmm. And that's why I brought this up.
Okay.
Believe me, there's no problem with the fish habitat out there. There's, for some reason, maybe it defies science, but there's no need for added fish habitat. But if you want to have added wetlands, because that thing has taken on a life of its own, you know, over the last 15 years as far as fish habitat. So I think it comes down to we want to be a good neighbor, still have a park that everyone can enjoy. And possibly there's a line in between where we drop the lake level a foot. We drop it 18 inches. We've had it dropped, you know, a lot further than that when it blew out in that rain event. And that was a 5-inch, hour and a half rain event. I was out there that day. So that's, you know, not something very common. And we've got that solved with the steel sheeting that's out there. But for the erosion that's been discussed and things, as soon as it gets nice here, we get the committee out there. I know everybody's been out there, but actually walk that shoreline. And this is nothing that we have to decide in the next couple of months. I mean, we've got a plan to have people out there hiking in May and fishing and things.
Mr. Chairman, would you expect something to be in the next RFP, in the next budget then, for something of this nature?
You know, how the county executive has handled it, and Ray and I have had meetings, you know, there really are no money set aside for any of this, but when we get to, there's parkland money, mm-hmm. And that's what would be used. We're going to be using some of that out at possibly on the hiking trail at Silver Lake that we're going to discuss, you know, this evening. The first stages of this park have been completed as far as getting it so people can get in there. That's that entranceway and all the work that we did there. So the next big thing that I discussed and with Ray and the county executive, there's actual access past that, and that would be getting a road and a parking lot, you know, down in. The reason this is so important is before we actually start getting partners, and the whole idea, the concept here is to get partners involved.
Mm-hmm.
If we say to these partners, you know, please come in and what would you like to do for us? We'd like to put up a pavilion. Well, we've actually got to know the water level of that lake before we start doing those things, and that's why this is so important.
I was just trying to figure out the timetable we were looking at.
Yeah. That's why I think, and I wanted to spend, you know, a half hour, a meeting here on this, and you know, we don't have to decide, I think, tonight, and we just wanted to get this information, you know, from the company that put this all together for us. Give us something to think of.
Yes, sir.
Supervisor Grady?
If you have a comment, go ahead. I'll defer to you.
Thank you. One way to get a better understanding of how these water levels are tied to the lake is to put in some inexpensive piezometers or groundwater, basically perforated pipes and staff gauges that you can put into the ground. I mean, you can survey that level, put a groundwater well in there, a shallow one, 5 feet deep, stick one, and then put a couple of these areas, and then get the elevation of the lake. And that's something relatively inexpensive that you could do, and you could get a better understanding of how they're related.
You just don't believe me, do you, that the neighbor's water goes down?
No, I do believe you.
Okay.
But that's without putting control structures up here. And there's a good chance that if you control this water level, you can still stack the water level up over here.
See, that's what's confusing to me, how you can stop the groundwater in a 200-acre, I don't know how many thousand feet line, from getting through with a couple structures.
It's a combination of ground and surface. It's both. And the stop logs address the surface water primarily.
Well, let me ask this question, and this is going to put the whole thing in focus. If you're looking at that slough on the west side of that lake right there, is it your contention that some of the groundwater will actually come up and percolate through into that slough area? Is that your possible?
Well, the slough goes downhill, so the slough is already slightly above the lake elevation. So you could make a case that the slough is controlling the water levels of these lakes right now. I mean, already, we didn't take a rod out there, but I bet you'll find that's higher than that, which is higher than that, which is higher than that. I don't know that, but I bet that's true.
Sure.
So if that slough were dammed up or held to a certain extent, your contentions may be able to mitigate the drop of those surrounding ponds if the large lake level were to go down. You think that's a realistic possibility?
Yes.
But it's interesting, and that's a definite thing we should evaluate. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to toss in one other thing here about the lakes. When you look at these two plans, A and B, they're different philosophies. The plan A is more kind of like your picture postcard, the shore stops right there and the lake begins. Some people find that very nice, it's aesthetically appealing, and it has a certain value. Plan B here is, quote, more natural. It's got the swales, it's got the weeds and the reeds, and it's more kind of a eco-friendly type approach. Is one better than the other? I don't know. But I think that's one of the things we're going to have to wade through and talk about in successive meetings in addition to our other discussions.
Yeah. So,
the small lakes, are they all spring-fed, these neighbors you're talking about?
Yeah.
And so they don't depend on any runoff?
Well, they all do. Every pond does.
We're not going to have any runoff this year.
Right.
There's nothing there. And if it doesn't rain this spring, we're going to have little lakes all the way around.
But it's all gravel from our lake, over to Highway O and beyond.
Back.
To the west, right. You dig a hole.
It's been a while since I've been out there. I need to go back out there.
You go as a
committee.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's important.
So is there
lay of the land again.
Anything else this evening anyone would like to? If not, I think this is, if there's no objections, this is kind of how I want to do this, and we hit something for a short period. I didn't expect it to be that long tonight.
Thank you.
And we thank you very much.
Thank you.
And,
thank you. Please feel calm. Do you have any other questions?
Oh, look, we probably will. We will. You can probably tell we'll have.
We'll get you on speed dial.
So we'll move on to, John, you probably have the resolution to, or I don't know who's going to do that for the. Yep.
And this is a resolution to, resolution 22, I was authorized to submit grant and ask for grant funding. And I found out that with the stewardship grant and a recreational trails grant, I was tentatively awarded $115,116 through the stewardship grant and $45,000 through a recreational trails grant. The whole purpose of this grant is to, I think everybody has a map there showing the trail. One of the things that they're cool, the trail is 320,432, and since it's 50% match, the county share would be 160,216. So what this grant is asking is to authorize the general manager of parks, which is me, to accept these grants and go ahead and install this trail and do a budget modification in the 2012 budget to accept it.
Any discussion? Questions? Yes, sir.
Motion to approve.
Move to approve. Do we have a resolution number or no?
You said 22.
Not yet.
That'll
be in a week, not tomorrow. We have a second. Second by Supervisor O'Day. Motion made by Supervisor Frederick. Discussion on the motion. If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Youth and Governance?
Aye.
Carries unanimously. Thank you. New business parks.
In your packet, I have my report. I attached the Criminal Nature Center minutes. And I give you a copy of each of the dog park sites. The designs were done by Doc Carlisle, and the other one by Marilyn Close. The signs are already at the sign shop being constructed, and we hope to have those in by the end of March. We did take down that beat-up sign at Warren Close. So as soon as this is in, hopefully you can hear from the end of the month, we'll get those in. Pembroke grounds and the roofs update. The roofs, the resolution that was passed last week at the county board level authorized the county to accept the insurance monies to go ahead with those roof repairs. So the contractor was getting his materials and gearing up to start that, and I expect to see him down there any day. I haven't heard from him yet when they're going to meet there so we can go over a pre-construction meeting, but I'm sure that's coming up quick. As far as the grounds go, not a lot to report there this winter. We had hoped for the ground to freeze up because there's a memorial sidewalk down there that's brick pavers. We've got some tree trunks that are right up against the chapel and Ambrose, or no, the Durkee Mansion. And we couldn't get across that sidewalk, so we just held off. We were hoping to get our equipment down there. And we just never got the opportunity. Believe it or not, either there was too much snow or the ground was too soft. So that still has to be done. We did, when we talked, this committee directed me to form a committee to take a look at the Kemper grounds, look at what's going on down there as far as activities and events, and also to take a look at the planning program. We came up with calling that the Kenosha Ground, the Kemper Grounds Visioning Work Group, and the folks that sit on that committee are Kate Drone from Gateway, Nancy Weatherhead from Kemper Center, Barb Larson from the UW Extension, and Rich Ostergaard, who is a master gardener. And I know he would still like me to find a private landscaper or forester to sit on this as well?
Yeah, not a landscaper so much as a nurseryman.
A nurseryman?
You know, from the Kenosha, like, you know, the Schwartz Nurseries or somebody in Kenosha. And the reason I brought this up originally was to prevent haphazard planting that people sometimes do when they're in a panic because they lost all those trees. And you get a committee full of well-wishing people that don't know what they're doing. And that could include a master gardener, in my mind, as far as the actual native landscaping that would be on Lake Michigan and what grows in the city of Kenosha. The day after that storm, when I went out there, and you know, everyone told me of the chaos and the havoc out there, I drove in there and I saw stuff that shouldn't have been there in the first place. And I know well-wishing people did it, but that's why I think we need, and even if you form a committee, I still want it to have to come back to this committee before people stick a shovel in the ground.
Right. Yeah. And that is what the committee knows.
And that's why I recommend a nurseryman. Somebody local, I don't care if they're from Northern Illinois, Kenosha, or Sean County.
Someone that's familiar with local.
Yes.
Native trees.
Correct.
Okay, and then the next thing on my report is just an update on the new playground equipment installation. Everything's ordered, the colors are selected. We're hoping to have everything installed. Well, the plan is to have it installed by May 15th. And it looks like we're on track to do that. At the bottom, you'll see that I bought 92 new picnic tables and 42 replacement barbecue grills. So to my knowledge, the last time we bought picnic tables was in 1974. So, and we get whittled down, people steal them and things like that, so we were due. This year, we are going to get a summer youth crew again. The crews are going to be a little bit smaller than they've been in the past, and we did ask to put about a four-man crew down at Kemper just to do some of the hand seating and leveling out a lot of spots down there. They have a lot of work just working in the shrub beds and everything else down there that'll keep those young folks out of trouble. The last thing was the Pickering Springs Dam, right? The dam removal, bridge installation, and motor parking lot projects. And I passed from a picture, artist's 3D rendering of the bridge design. I don't know if everybody saw it. But anyways, the way it looks, all permits should be complete by mid-April. There's one Chapter 30 permit out there that the worst case scenario would be delayed until mid-May. But right now they're talking like they're not foreseeing that as a problem. It's two projects, the dam removal and the bridge are one, and then the roadway and parking lots are another one. Now they're going to be advertised and open at the same time, but they are being bid as two separate projects. Bid opening is anticipated to be around the end of March and awards made by mid-April. The dam project cannot begin until June 1st, and that's pretty much DNR stipulation. Staging will begin for the dam project in May, and they plan to store all the materials along the roadway north of the dam. The roadway project is divided into three segments, which is the east segment, which runs from Highway JR to the flagpole, the mid segment, which runs from the flagpole to the dam, and the west segment, which runs from the dam to Highway A. The way the contractor or the consultant or the engineering firm feels it would be most advantageous is to start from the dam on the mid segment and go to the flagpole and complete that, then move to the east segment to Highway J, County Road JR, and that leaves the west segment off of County A for the construction equipment for the dam so it doesn't bust up the new roadway. The completion of both projects is tentatively October 1st, but again, that's weather dependent. But that is what they're roughly predicting. For the dam end, the bridge end, and the road parking lot's completed.
Any questions for Mr. Rudy?
Just a time frame. The Hill Road going between JR and A, that would occur next construction season?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a different phase.
And then do we have anything in the CIP for those lots up there by golf? Is there, what's the situation with those?
We had money in there, and on this last budget period, they were pushed out to 2016.
Thank you.
Anything else for Mr. Rudy? Thank you, John. As always, man, it's nice to have the pictures and the full report. We're going to move on. New business golf. The first item is a resolution which is an alternate to Resolution 80 and 79, that we voted down at our previous meeting and asked the administration and the department to come forward with something to replace them. So before you, we have an unnumbered resolution that takes the place. What it does is basically tell the golf operation that they'll be operating under the 2012 budget as normal with a little bit reduced maintenance. If you remember, that reduced maintenance was going to save us, I believe, $47,000 this year. We were in this resolution directing them to then look into the enhancing of the golf operations by looking at RFPs for concessions for 2013 and for liquor sales in 2013. Also, we're recommending in this resolution that we adopt as many of the recommendations in the velocity study. And that'll cover most of what was in, I believe, Resolution 79. So what you have before you is items that we've discussed, and what it also does is then say for 2013 that the Red Nine would be closed, and for the remainder of this season we'd be asking the golf operation to come up with recommendations for that Red Nine as far as practice facilities. And some of the items that we've seen on a plan that would have three practice holes and advanced driving range. So that's what this is. So it's before you, and any discussion?
Mr. Chairman,
right?
I just wanted to ask.
Just use this one.
Yeah, because we've got resolutions. I know I gave Kathy the resolutions to send in the package. Looks like she made a two-sided, the same paper. So the signature page is right on the resolution. If that's acceptable, that is what the, because the original, she must have the originals in her pile yet, that are actually the two papers for both John's resolution. You think you know where they are?
Yeah.
Oh, John will try to find them for signatures at least.
This is the original.
Yeah. I mean, it could go to the county board this way also, as long as they had both sides.
Okay, then if you're good with that, then this I just wanted to.
Oh, okay.
It's got a blue ink on it. I just
wanted
to make sure we hear
that. Sure, Frederick.
I just wanted to double check. We're not committing any dollars to anything, to just say and do the Red Nine as we reduce maintenance under this resolution. No dollars are being spent otherwise.
Correct. In fact, there should be on the back, you know, on the page just after that in your packet.
That was the one we just signed.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
There should be a list of actual savings. Mm-hmm. This is money that we're just not going to spend. This isn't going to be money saved. But it would be the capital spending that would be done on that Red Nine. The irrigation that in the future, if we kept it open, would be done. And the deferred maintenance. And that also gives the cost of constructing a new range and the practice hole. But this resolution is saying, that is just information, but this resolution is saying that for this year, we'd operate according to the budget of 2012, and that would be keeping the Red Nine open, reducing some of the maintenance on it, and that savings has been documented or estimated at $47,000. And then we're asking the Division of Golf and Public Works to come up with idea for the Red Nine on the practice facility and the management of the concessions. Supervisor Gess?
I have a concern about
There's nothing specifically in here in 2013 that says that we're going to actually, if we close the Red 9, that we're going to actually start on a new practice facility. I would hate to see us close the Red 9 in 2013 and not do anything, period. So rather than specifically state that we're going to close the Red 9 in 2013, I would rather see this resolution state that we're going to review or do something in the budget for 2013 before we would close it. If we're not going to budget any money for the practice facility in 2013, then the resolution should state that the Red 9 will stay open until the county board funds the ability to open the practice facility. So I'm very concerned about just stating in this resolution that we're going to close it in 2013. And I can tell you that I've gotten a lot of feedback from people who are not happy about closing the Red 9. So.
Anyone else?
I was at the golf shows in Chicago and Milwaukee in the last 2 weekends, and I need to echo what Gail just said. There were so many people there, expressing concern about the Red 9 and closing it, and just making sure that, we fully study what we're doing and make sure that it's the right decision for that facility before anything happens. So there were lots and lots of comments on from many different people. One of the biggest topics.
In agreement with Supervisor Gens and Mr. Dreyer, the youth have expressed their concern about it now. And I mean, we should look out for the taxpayers, of course, and look out for the recreation of the county, but also what our youth express, because really they're the next generation. And for us to provide a recreational facility, our high school can use it, our youth can use it. I think with the concern of the youth, it is very important that maybe we do reconsider whether keeping it open or adding something in this resolution that would define a certain language. And I know before this meeting, I was in agreement that we do close it because it does save the county a lot of money. I mean, we've got, I thought it was 700,000. I learned the specific number.
722.
That's a lot of money saved. But then you look at the benefit the cost versus benefit. And I mean, there's an overwhelming amount of benefits you're seeing with the Red 9. I mean, as I said, the high school students use it for practice. Families use the Red 9 course for kind of a family recreational play. So when it comes down to the push versus shove, I think it's a benefit that we do add some sort of language that would develop it more into what Supervisor Gens had said. So that is kind of what I would foresee.
Anyone else? Supervisor Day.
Right now, just to go on with Supervisor Gens' comments, if we just took that be it further resolved out, the closing the golf that night and keep the rest of the resolution the way it is, wouldn't that solve a lot of that?
It would, but I'm not going to pass the gavel, so I'm not going to debate. But I just want everyone to look forward to the meeting that this is presented at. And we're sitting here with a friendly group right now that's all in favor of us not closing it, but there's a large group of county board supervisors in favor of closing it. So we have to come up with something that appeases everyone.
This says we're going to close it in 2013. Then.
Right. So my recommendation would be to add some language that rather than take that out, leave that possibility there or add to that one in some way of phrasing that the option is there, but the recommendation would be some type of, as Supervisor Gens said, some type of further study. Any further study, but, you know, to see. Supervisor Esposito?
I'm going to go on the flip side, and I've been on this aspect from day one. The constituents in my area, as I've said on numerous occasions, want this red line closed. You know, we all know the financial constraints of golf and their problems, and they're tired of paying for it. So that's the end that I'm getting, the end game from the constituents in my area. I know Supervisor Dan stated that they've had a lot of people want to keep this red line open. You know, I'm sure these people that want to keep it open, I mean, if they're willing to pay more tax than the people that don't want to, pay less tax, but obviously that can't happen. So, you know, this is really a conflicting issue, you know. I can see both sides of the debate here, but more often than not, I've had overwhelming concern of the money that's being spent in golf with the negative return. That's all I wanted to add.
Supervisor Frederick?
I actually have heard the same things from my constituents as well, because it's east of the interstate and they don't go out and golf much. But what I would like to also do is see the recommendations made by golf to see what they come up with that may enhance, you know, to see what else is out there. And in fact, I had some added some language if I can give it at the time.
It is west of the eye, by the way.
I'm sorry. Well, I was saying my district's east of the eye. And they're saying that they're not. But what I have is, be it further resolved that the Kenosha County Board of Supervisors study the recommendation of golf management to close the Red Nine course for the 2013 and beyond, with a final decision to be made with the 2013 budget. And give them an opportunity to show us how they can enhance it out there.
Would you repeat that?
But be it further resolved that the Kenosha County Board of Supervisors studied the recommendation of golf management to close the Red Nine course for the 2000 season and beyond, with a final decision to be made with the 2013 budget.
Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Second by Supervisor Gess. That would replace the...
Expanding that resolution.
Can you repeat that again, please?
Yeah, where are you putting that in?
Yeah, in the first, be it further resolved. Be it further resolved that the Kenosha County Board of Supervisors study the recommendation of golf management to close the Red Nine course for the 2013 season and beyond, with a final decision to be made with the 2013 budget. I don't know if there's a better word we can have than study.
I was trying to come up with one that was an idea.
Are we in discussion?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think this is headed in the right direction, but I don't think it really takes us where we want to go. It basically takes us from a proactive to now kind of a neutral stance, at least in terms of this trend. It's basically deferring it until the 2013 budget. I think if you're trying to accomplish what Supervisor Gens mentioned, you'd actually go down to the next paragraph and further resolve. And at the end, you would add some language basically stating our viewpoint that there would be funds in the 2013 budget for the practice facility. And I think that would take us into the proactive territory, same as what we expect in the budget, rather than just saying study the 2013 budget. So that's not going to be offered at this point because that would be a separate resolution, but that's just my comment upon where at the moment.
Supervisor Gess?
I just want to state my concern that I don't want us to be constrained by this resolution that we have to close that Red Nine in 2013, and then when it comes budget time, they don't want to put the money in to put a practice facility together. I know that the money that our debt service is going to be paid off in 2015, is that correct?
Yes.
Which gives us about $350,000 more every year in our budget that we don't, that doesn't come right off the top. You know, maybe if we kept the Red 9 open until our debt service was satisfied and give us the ability to have extra money to utilize towards the practice facility. And it would give us more time to be able to come up with a comprehensive plan on what we want to do and what would be the best interest, not only for the whole community. I mean, if we're going to put a practice facility in, which seems to be the something that we've talked about, and certainly there's been studies out that that would be the thing. I personally think a practice facility with maybe 5 or 6 holes would be the answer, not just 3. But you know, I don't know that. I don't have the ability to come up with the best possible solution. I just don't want to see us constrained tonight and then put this resolution in front of the county board that would not be thought out and try to come up with the best plan possible for this golf course, because it really is part of our community. It's not just for golfers. It's for everyone who lives in Kenosha County. I mean, it's just like parks. It's like the KD Park. How many people from east of the I have been out to the KD Park? And the KD Park doesn't pay for itself. None of our parks pay for themselves. I mean, that's our obligation as county board members to provide those facilities and those parks and recreational areas for the people in our community. And it's good for economic development. So I just don't want to see us constrained by this resolution. I don't know if I'm particularly fond of that new language, and I haven't come up with a better wording, but I'm open to suggestions.
I appreciate what Gail's saying, but you know, at the end of the day, I'm just telling you where my constituents are coming from. Where are we going to make money when golf loses money? Overall, every year golf loses money. So I don't know what funds we're going to generate to make a different practice field or a practice course. I can see both sides. I really can. But, you know, at the end of the day, like I've stated before, we're in a really tough situation to make a proper recommendation when this is really quality of environment and life for individuals versus what taxpayers want to pay for. I mean, they're split down the middle. I mean, I'm telling you, in my area, they're on fire about this issue. They're on fire. They do not want to pay for something that continually loses money. I mean, they're tired of it. And maybe part of it's because they don't. I am, as Supervisor Frederick, east of the I. But you know, numerous of calls I've gotten on this. Numerous. And it's a tough situation. But I have to at least make a statement on the situation at hand. So,
Supervisor O'Day.
We had a lot of conversation about if we close it, the Red 9, and I don't golf, so that if you ever wanted to bring any of it back, it was going to be cost prohibitive. Am I right in that?
Yeah, if we closed it, what the recommendation here is with this resolution is to close it in 2013, but keep 3 of the holes as a practice facility and expand the driving range. And then the rest would be, yes, mothball. It'd be put into the park, part of the park.
Yeah. So it would be gone forever.
It would be a part of the park.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, I don't know where all these phone calls are coming from. Yeah, I don't know. I don't get a phone call about this at all, maybe because I'm in the city. I don't know. I haven't got a phone call about golf since we raised the seniors and made them pay tax in 1998, I think. So
you can move into my.
I don't.
You can take my calls. I have no problem with that. I'll give them your number.
So I'm not. However it works out from my standpoint, it's, I'm comfortable with it one way or the other. But, just so everybody knows it, once it's gone, I think it's gone.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not coming back. Because you're talking about all that irrigation costs and all this other stuff. And it's just, it'll change the makeup of the thing. And if that's okay with me either way.
What we're on right now is an amendment by Supervisor Frederick. In the first be it further resolved. And that would be to change that language, and we can read that again. Beth?
I just have two questions. The first one is for Mr. Kupfer and Mr. Dreyer. Have we ever had a tax levy increase due to Gulf operations singly, or I mean, has Gulf operations somehow affected the tax levy ever?
I can't answer that question ever.
Okay. I mean, well, in recent years, maybe. Maybe that's more. Have we ever just had an increase of taxes due to Gulf operations? That's just what I want to know.
Probably not, but we've had to move money around.
Yeah. And then my second is, have we ever had any concern over any of the other Gulf divisions? Because I know Brightdale has been at the debate a lot of times, but have we ever had issues with any of the other Gulf courses?
Well, if you go through that velocity study, there's a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A whole lot. So, and they were asked to look at it as a business, you know, and so there is a lot of problems. It was probably 8 years ago or so, last time we were even, or maybe it's 9 years ago. And then we lost 200 in 1 year, we lost $650,000. We've lost 400, we've lost 350, I think last year it was 200. So you do have people that are very tired of losing money. And that's why we asked to have this study done, and that's what our discussion is, you know, tonight. To say. We've never had to, that I can remember, take money from the, a tax levy to... Oh, but I shouldn't say that because personnel and everything, that's all levy dollars. So, yes.
Okay.
I mean, every year we spend levy dollars. You know, what's the budget for the golf course? It's all levy dollars.
I can see the two sides of this debate. And when it comes down to the grindstone, we have to both look at the service we provide for the constituents, recreation, ability to go out to the community, and be able to enjoy the things that this county provides. And then you look at the business model, which is, I believe, in my personal opinion, a wrong view of government. Because, I mean, you do have to run the government like a business, but you also have to run it as a service for people. And so for us to only make a decision depending on a business model, I think it's wrong, because we need to look at both sides of the spectrum here. So that's what I would think would be.
Thank you. Supervisor Grady?
As I said before, I like the direction Supervisor Frederick has taken on this. I tend to be supportive of the concept, but I don't think it really gives us the recommendation that we want to have come out of this committee in terms of strength and making our case that we want to have the practice facility as a part of the whole program. So I'm basically going to vote against this resolution. Whichever way it comes out, I'll offer a substitute and a...
You mean the amendment?
In the amendment. Substitute amendment, later part of the meeting.
Okay. Anyone else on the amendments? Brother Coleman.
Yeah, the main concern I had too, I think, was somebody brought up, and I agree with your objective of trying to get this better thought out. I don't like that the word study doesn't sound proactive enough, but I think it, you know, if there's a better word we can use to go. I don't know. Take a more proactive stance that we're not just, we have this philosophy study and we're just going to sit on it. But, you know, I think we need something like we're recommending. If we didn't pass the closing, I'd still like to see something be done. I think this, by leaving funding to the budget time, at least it gives you a shot at implementing some of these solutions to see if we get a better, you know, better tracking. Like I think you brought up about better tracking of the number of poles, maybe lower maybe if the results come in better, maybe you can make a better argument at the budget. I mean, I'm supervisor at Esposito. I get a lot of calls. Both years I've been on that complaints. No, I mean, this was the biggest issue, honestly, calls I've gotten.
Oh,
budget.
My
people complaints, the deficit, not the condition, for the condition's great, just the deficit that we run. So I think something has to be done, but I just want us to do nothing, basically, and say we're going to study this. I think it presents a bad position to the taxpayer that we're just going to study something further after we spent lots of money on a study.
Supervisor Flutter, did you ever have it?
No, I was just trying to come up with some sort of, however we vote on the amendment, is at least trying to follow what we're trying to come up with, because I think we're of the same mindset, just trying to find the right wording for it.
Right.
Just a reminder that in the 2012 budget, we've budgeted a zero levy for the golf course. And with the, obviously, in the last 3 years, there's been a lot of changes going on that hopefully will get us to that zero levy budget. Because not only with personnel, we've had a lot of personnel changes, we've had a lot of, obviously, we don't have people cutting grass out there who are making a lot of money. We've been able to eliminate that part of it. So there were many reasons why the golf course was not making money and was losing money, and we've remedied a lot of those problems and those situations. The other thing is that the parks, you know, the golf is part of the parks budget, and the parks budget has been able to pick up the whatever deficit that the golf course was running. So we didn't have to go to the general fund for any money. That was levy dollars that was passed in the budget. And we've never had to go over those levy dollars that were originally passed for the parks budget. We've been able to absorb those from other areas, correct?
Yeah, I just want to clarify. It's not parks budget, the public works budget.
Public works budget. I'm sorry. I know it's all under one umbrella. So, you know, I'm just, when people say that they're tired of picking up the cost of the golf course, it's not just the golf course. It's the golf course, it's the parks, it's the everything else that comes under that umbrella of that part of the budget. So I just want to add that. And let's give the golf course an opportunity this year to see if we're going to hit that target. I mean, we don't know, but they certainly are going to try. And, you know, it's changed a lot in the last 3 years. So, 3 or 4 years, when we've been able to bring some different people on. So,
I got a question.
I'm going to just remind everyone that we're on this amendment. And I'm serious, I would save that type of debate because you're going to need it on the county board floor.
Yep.
It's not going to be needed so hard here, but
I know.
We've got to come up with some proper wording. Supervisor Esposito?
No.
So, on the amendment, would you like to read that amendment again? Then we'll.
Sure. Whether it be resolved that the Kenosha County Board of Supervisors study the recommendation of golf manager to close the Red 9 course for the 2013 season and beyond, with a final decision to be made with the 2013 budget.
So on the amendment, all those in favor say aye.
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 Nay.
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 Use of governance.
I'll abstain.
Okay. Well, the amendment fails. So we're back on our unnumbered resolution here before us.
If it pleases the committee, I'd like to make an amendment to the resolution as it stated. And I really think this will, I'll introduce the first beginning of discussion later. It'll be the second to the bottom paragraph on your page. We have further resolved that the Kenosha County Board of Supervisors direct golf management to develop a plan for enhancing the practice facilities at Brightondale, and authorize appropriate funding in the 2013 budget for such practice facility. That is my motion. That was my amendment.
We have a second on that?
I'll
say. Edway, Supervisor O'Day.
Can we hear that again?
Yeah, can you tell us that again?
So it's all the same up to practice facilities in Brightondale, and then after the and, you can pencil in, authorize appropriate funding in the 2013 budget for such practice facility.
You could come into some problem with that.
Yeah.
That wording with "and authorize," because we really can't authorize at this point.
Recommend.
That'd be a lot better.
I'll revise my amendment to strike authorize and
recommend, appropriate funding. Is that okay with the second?
Sure. Discussion.
Discussion on that amendment, Supervisor Frederick.
The one thing is we're recommending for something we don't have a dollar amount for, and that's what I have a issue with, is we're recommending telling the next County Board of Supervisors, we recommend you do this, but we're not telling them how much it'll be and anything else.
You're right. Can I manage that?
Yeah.
If you look at the same pages, there's basically a $495,000 price tag that's mentioned. And really the way this is going to work from a mechanical standpoint is we're making the recommendation. You know, the administration's moving down with their 2013 budget. So it's really not tying the hands of the next county board. It's basically saying from a legislative body to the administration, this is what we expect in an upcoming budget. We'd like to see this brought forward. This can be debated or changed around on the county board floor, even as it's presented when it will be tomorrow.
It won't be tomorrow.
Is it on the upcoming
one? 20th.
It's got to go to finance.
So there's many kicks at the can left, so to speak.
Somebody's going to come up with some other wording.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Otherwise, without the dollar amount, I'm okay with the wording of it. Is
again, my only concern about this is that we still have this language in there that says that we're going to close the Red 9 in 2013. So if they don't budget the money, so I'd agree to this if you'd strike that whole closing it in 2013. Yes.
Right.
I was going to say to that point, so is there a way just to move beyond it by saying something about, is there a way you can work, recommend something to close it in the 2013 budget so that you got to recommend to study or recommend to do the enhancement? You also have a recommend as opposed to a fatal commitment at this point. Would that be enough, a recommendation for it to be closed in the 2013 budget? So you have two recommendations that are going to be part of the 2013, is that a way to get past it?
Well, the recommendation of golf management is to close it. So, I mean,
that's where we're at.
And the way we actually, that recommendation was, it was a package. It was recommended to close it and do the enhanced facility.
Correct.
And the resolution says that, but it maybe doesn't say it as nuts and bolts wise. It doesn't tie them as tightly together, which I think is Gail's concern. I think is what I'm hearing from. Just looking for a way to get beyond.
Well, you know, just so everyone have a little pause, there could be a resolution next fall at budget time to keep the Red 9 open. It's that simple.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just to plug in through the chair to Mr. Dreyer, if we were to do as we suggest here, we would not have the Red 9 open past the 2012 season. What type of a facility could we have out there for practice in lieu of having the full-scale construction. If we have some type of practice facility before the next season when you do actual physical construction.
Well, we would have the current facility that we have, which is woefully inadequate with 9 matted tees and a too short of a range. I mean, we have people that are hitting balls in the number 2 fairway now over the trees, you know, so, you know, part of the idea of the practice facility is to use number 9 red green for the sand and chipping practice, which that definitely could be enacted, you know, and that would be a nice addition to the facility. But with, you know, the range definitely needs work. I mean, we could, you know, have a makeshift deal, you know, it would need some study into how we can do it, but we could have some makeshift, you know, practice facility out there without the red 9 open. I mean, one of the limiting factors now is to back up by the red 9 tee. If anybody, you know, hooks the ball off of there, you know, people can get point with the golf ball if they're practicing up there.
So I guess my question is, spring of 2013, we have a choice, either tear the thing apart, I mean, if this goes according to plan, go to the practice facility, or do something in the interim until the practice facility is constructed. So I guess it's kind of a little bit off topic from where we're going, but kind of like a sense from golf management as to what your intent would be to proceed spring of 2013 if we follow this course here.
2013, we would hopefully have the construction documents created in the January, and then, you know, as soon as availability comes about, we would be constructing a new a practice tee. We would be clearing trees. We would be expanding number 1, the practice range, to include number 1 red, number 2 tee area red. We would take down some trees in between that area.
So you'd be under construction, basically, not really operating it as a golf practice facility in the spring of 2013.
In the spring, correct.
That's my question. We can go back to our...
And the other thing I want to remind everyone is it is the recommendation of our professionals that we do this.
Yes.
And if you remember, in your packet, you had a very well-written couple articles about practice facilities. So, right against?
I have a friendly amendment to your resolution. I would like to change the first, be it further resolved, to state that, be it further resolved that the Kenosha County Board of Supervisors recommend to golf management to close the Red 9 course for the 2013 season and beyond.
Is that different than what's written here?
Yes, because we're not adopting anything. We're recommending.
We're in which paragraph now?
It's the first, be it further resolved.
Yes, my modification was to the...
Yours would be to the next paragraph.
The next paragraph.
Right.
Right, we should do one at a time here. We'll stick with Supervisor Grady's.
Okay.
Anything else on Supervisor Grady's amendment?
Can we get a restatement of that just one more time?
Supervisor Grady.
We're looking at the second paragraph from the bottom. The 1-2-3 line reads practice facilities at Brightondale. So that all stays the same and stays the same. And the part that changes, beginning with recommends appropriate funding in the 2013 budget for such practice facility.
Any more discussion on that amendment? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Youth and Governance?
Aye.
Motion carries. Did you get that amendment?
I have it on tape, but I don't know how many voted for it yet.
Supervisor Esposito was the only one that voted against.
Okay, now I can make my recommendation.
Yeah, now we're going to discuss the resolution as amended.
Okay. I would like to make another amendment to the resolution to paragraph, to the be it resolved paragraph. And that would be it resolved that the Kenosha County Board of Supervisors recommend to Gulf Management to close the Red Nine course for the 2013 season and beyond.
Second. On that discussion.
I think it's appropriate. I think it basically details what the committee's talked about so far. It's just a further clarification. So I'll be in support of it. I want to further say that in this whole business here we're looking at, this is not my first choice to close these Red Nine holes. I would rather have them stay open and be functional. But I think in the nature of politics as it is, we have to bow to our constituents who voice their opinions and a sign of the time. So although this is not my preferred method, I see us being put in the place where we have to have some degree of compromise, and this is where we're at the moment. Thank you.
So what is against?
And I want to second that. I agree with him totally. It is not my intention to close the Red Nine, but we are in a situation that we have to come up with some type of a resolution that hopefully is in the best interest of the golf course and the community. So
it's not my highest point either to close the golf course, but I do know that if we adopt something here this evening that recommends to golf management, we're taking the teeth out of the county board, and it's never going to make it through a county board meeting. So we got to come up with some different language for that too, because recommending to management, to the golf management, that's not saying a thing.
And your comment is resolved around both amendments, or what's your...
No, just this last one. And I'm not taking a point side either way, but I know recommending, the county board recommending the golf management isn't going to pass through supervisors that are against it. I mean, there's no teeth left for the county board then if you recommend.
What if you take out the golf management part? How does it read then? Just recommends to the board, does it? Going forward in the 2013 budget?
We could say, be it further resolved that the Kenosha County Board of Supervisors recommends to close the Red Nine course for the 2013 season and beyond, and just take out golf management. I'd be willing to take that as a friendly amendment to my amendment.
I will take a second on the point.
It's okay.
In favor of that.
Okay. Discussion on the amendment.
Reread, please.
Yes, please.
Okay. You want me to reread it? Okay. Be it further resolved that the Kenosha County Board of Supervisors recommends to close the Red Nine golf course for the 2013 season and beyond.
Thank you.
Further discussion? On that amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Youth and Governance?
Aye.
Okay. Opposed? That amendment carries. On the resolution as amended.
And I'll just offer one further thing before we vote on this. This is a situation where we're either going to do something or it's going to be done for us. So I think we're better off making that decision we are here, and I'm comfortable with that.
Supervisor Frederick?
May I ask for when this comes before the county board is, with the new practice facilities and the driving range, you're going to be charging for the driving range, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Is give some revenue projections and how much enhanced revenue we're going to get out of this, because if we're paying for something for, you know, that we're not going to get anything from, and let them know this could pay itself off over a period of time.
Right.
to respond to that. I know that Jim put together in the original analysis.
We've got all that, yeah.
Yeah, but that's what it's there for.
Oh, yeah. On the resolution as amended, any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? You the governors?
Aye.
Okay.
You answered who made the motion to approve it.
I did. I made a motion to approve it.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. And who seconded that?
I did.
Supervisor Getz. So now we'll move on to the director's report.
Well, we've been making a lot of calls to past groups. We're putting together an opening day press release, and we've been attending the golf shows in Chicago and Milwaukee. The golf show in Chicago was successful. We handed out about 2,500 golf coupons and had some outing inquiries. In Milwaukee, we handed out at least 3,500, probably closer to 4,000 golf coupons. We had many outing and league inquiries. The season passes were a hot topic, too. I just want to share some of the comments with you that we heard up there. And so many people were saying, you know, oh, Brightondale, you know, very, very good name recognition. A lot of people, you know, as soon as they saw it on our signs, you know, said, oh, that's my favorite course. Oh, I love that place, you know. Oh, whatever you're doing, keep it up. It's never been nicer. You know, it plays so nice. You know, it's in always great shape. I live in Milwaukee County, but I play in Kenosha County all the time. But there were a tremendous amount of people asking about the Red 9, and when I did kind of just reflect on, you know, the resolution that we have before you tonight, you know, we did get that, oh, you know, I guess that makes sense, you know, so a lot of people are voicing that they didn't want the Red 9 closed, but a lot of people were appeased when I took some time and kind of explained, you know, what our thought process was if it does, in fact, close. So the golf shows were really good. You know, I'm just hoping that, you know, that enthusiasm carries over to our operations. We'll be working on getting all the leagues signed up this month. We're starting our staff back March 12th. We're looking at the weather, trying to consider. We've been telling everybody the last couple weeks that we're going to open the 17th. We're trying to consider if we should open even this weekend. We do not have any cards, and the course will be really soggy, so it'll be kind of up to Dave Hasselin whether it can take the abuse if we do open this weekend. As I stated, the clubhouses will be opening March 17th. We'll be open for merchandise and pass sales. The golf courses will open if the golf courses are able to take, you know, people being out there. We're getting the carts back soon, so everything is going forward. We have staff that started today to do the cleanup of the clubhouses, and the work crew actually was the ones that started today, and so they're doing all the cleanup of the clubhouses, and then they'll be moved out to the golf courses shortly after that. All the websites and online websites have been updated. Currently, the offer that we went to the golf shows with was $18 for 18 holes, and if for walking, $29 to ride, and $49 for unlimited golf. So I think that had a good ring to it. A lot of people were really excited, and with handing out 6,500 coupons, I think it should make an impact. If you want to turn your page, attached is the pricing form and the bid tabulation on the back, which we went out to with for the White Birch irrigation. If you read, the base bid is all of the things that we will be accomplishing on the White Birch 18. All the deducts, we didn't have to do any of those, so those were in case we didn't have the finances to do those, but we were able to add add-ons number 4 and 5. So the only things that won't be done with the irrigation is holes number 2 and 3, which last season we already replaced the fairway heads. So all those fairway heads are currently replaced. So the 16 holes out of the 18 on the White Birch will be new irrigation, and then hopefully we'll have the paving done also by, you know, the middle of June is what we're really looking for. So the irrigation and continuous cart paths could be paved on the White Birch by June 15th is when we set the bid up for. And then the back page is just who bid on it and what the bids were. And you know, we got, again, up through add-on number 5 done.
Thank you, Dan. Mm-hmm. Any questions on that? Now we'll move along to the Highway Director's Report.
I received an inquiry from Supervisor Grady regarding the use of compressed natural gas vehicles, and I don't have a report regarding the use, but I do have some experience through our highway department with CNG vehicles. We, I think it was back in 1996-97, received a federal grant to install a compressed natural gas station at in our yard here and to purchase some vehicles. So we did proceed with that program. And had good luck with the vehicles as far as the operation of them, but there was some fairly significant issues with the cost of the program, and then from an operational standpoint too. Back then, as there is today, there basically are no vehicles available that you can buy from a factory that operate on compressed natural gas. All of these vehicles that you use have to have conversion kits installed on them so that they can operate on natural gas. And if we were in Europe, there'd be cars and vehicles everywhere that you could buy from the factory to operate on CNG, but it's not the case here. And those conversion kits cost about between $5,000 and $8,000 to be installed on the vehicle. So there's a significant amount of upfront cost associated with the installation of those kits. And then the other, from an operational standpoint, you get about the same mileage per gallon equivalent of the CNG, but the range available is quite small because you have to have these very large tanks put on the vehicle to store the compressed natural gas, and you just can't get enough gallons on a vehicle. So we found that our vehicles would have to fill up at least every day, maybe more than once a day. They'd have to return to our shop and fill up. So some issues on the operational side. We did operate those vehicles for a number of years. In fact, the pickup truck that I usually drive even now is a 1998 Ford, and it still has that CNG conversion kit on it. So, you know, we did, we basically operated the CNG program until there just weren't any more grants available to purchase the conversion kits, and with the lack of available vehicles, it just, we've basically shut down the program for now. Not that it couldn't be restarted, you know, if in fact the technology is available. I think the key to this right now is to look at you know, the difference between the cost of natural gas and unleaded gasoline, and see if in fact the additional cost involved in converting vehicles is worthwhile from a cost benefit standpoint. I've not done that I'm not sure, you know, how we would proceed with that, but just wanted to give you a little bit of the background information on our experience with that program.
Thank you, Gary. And I believe the initial question came at a Finance Committee meeting from Supervisor Singer, and his biggest concern was how can we save money? Mm-hmm. And I know, I'm surprised he didn't know about this, because I've known about it for years that we already had dollars. But so if they were worried about the environment, it'd be one thing. With money, we can't save money.
From a clean air standpoint, there's no question about the benefits. I mean, the exhaust out from those, you know, you could put a white handkerchief over the exhaust pipe on one of those vehicles and run it, and you'd never notice, never see a thing on them. So that's not even the question. Clean air benefits are great, but it's the cost involved that really is something that needs to be looked into much further.
I will take that back to the Finance Committee, and I thank you for your report. If you just have the opportunity in the upcoming weeks or months to see if anything has changed in the interim, if we're doing better with storage capacity or the new technology or process of that, but I'll take this back to them.
Sure. The other item I wanted to just let you know about, I received the 30% plans from the Wisconsin Department of Transportation for the proposed reconstruction of the intersection of Highway K and 45. The 30% plans are basically what it says, that the plans are 30% complete, but they like to give them out at this point for review, and they have decided to reconstruct that intersection as a roundabout. So they're proceeding forward with that plan. Let's see if I have something I could pass around. Yeah, just pass it around. That's basically what the intersection would look at like when it's completed. We're still, I think, a couple years out before the construction, so there'll be opportunities from a public informational meeting standpoint. If you know you have a feeling strongly one way or the other, I can keep you informed as to when those meetings might occur, but they have chosen to construct the roundabout. The other project, in fact, there's on this Wednesday, there's a public informational meeting on the Highway 158 expansion project. It pretty much includes all of Highway 158 between I-94 and Highway 31. They're going to reconstruct that, or propose to reconstruct that into a four-lane facility, and again another roundabout at Highway 158 and Highway H is proposed. In this Wednesday, March 7th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Bank of Kenosha on Green Bay Road, there's a public informational meeting. If you want any specific information, let contact me and I'll be happy to give that to you. So that was all of my report for tonight.
Thank you, Gary. Any questions for Gary?
Just on this illustration that's come around here, Gary, you know, I think we're all past and a little bit familiar with roundabouts at lower speed areas, you know, almost semi-residential or institutional type of thing. Have you actually had experience firsthand with these higher speed roads and roundabouts? Is that...
I've not. The experience I have had is that on a higher speed road, they would typically lower the speed limit on the approaches to 45 miles per hour. Although not in all instances is that true, but if the ones that I've been involved with, we're actually looking at reducing the speed on all the approaches to 45 at the highest. So. I guess my concern on that one would be more related to the trucking that's involved on Highway 45. Highway 45 is used as the overweight, over width trucking route instead of putting the vehicles on I-94 that are oversized. They always run on Highway 45, and we got the trucks involved in the landfill, I think that's the most important component of that design, is that it can accommodate the trucks that typically use Highway 45.
Does it meet that specification as a design?
It's one of the things that I'll be working with the DOT. We have a meeting coming up next week to discuss that 30% plan with the DOT, and it's something that, an issue that I'm going to bring up at that meeting.
Senator Frederick?
For on 158 and H, mm-hmm. That's already with the industrial parks right there. Mm-hmm. Already a nightmare when it comes to lighting up trucks. Putting a roundabout right there, lowering the speed limit, is going to make all that intersection a nightmare.
Yeah, and I think maybe you should go to the public information.
It was already on my list.
And let them know that, because they need to hear that. They need to hear that from people that are experienced in this area, of Kenosha County, so that they realize. The people that do these projects typically are from around here, and it's very beneficial for them to hear comments just like you made.
Do you know why there's a stoplight there now? Why would they go to a roundabout? I mean, I had the same thought too. I'm like, well, oh my gosh.
They look at it from a traffic safety standpoint. They feel that the roundabouts almost completely eliminate the possibility of severe accidents. It eliminates the right angle T-bone type accidents that are always the ones that are most severe when it comes to a personal injury standpoint. And that's really what their argument is for installing the roundabouts.
They've got stats on that too, and it's true.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like them, because I know why it is, because everybody's so confused. You can't go fast, you don't hurt anybody.
Just keep going in the back.
I saw people, they got them now. I've never been to Ho-Chunk, and we went this winter, and there's like three of them as you're going up there. I said, he's like circling the wagon, and then you get to the casino. My sister told me how to do it. You couldn't get hurt on that thing.
That's their argument in favor.
You've seen those. Yeah. Anything else for Mr. Sitchman? If not, we'll move on.
Oh, just one more.
Go ahead.
On 18th Street, is there some resolution yet so we don't know where we are with that?
Yes, and there's some negotiations going on right now with the city, and if we're successful, the city's pretty much going to come up with a resolution to the whole problem. So yeah, we're working directly with the city right now, but I'm confident we'll come to a conclusion. So it's not that there's nothing going on anymore. We're actively talking to the city, and there should be a resolution to it soon.
Thank you.
Mr. Ferg?
I've been asked the start date for Highway K by numerous people. Any idea on that one?
I don't have the exact start date yet. It's probably, I'm thinking it's going to be about a mid-June start date for 60th Street. Between 31 and the UP Railroad, but that project is managed through the Wisconsin Department of Transportation because of the federal funds involved. So we have a limited amount of scheduling input available to us.
But scheduling, it's just people have been going, when is this going to happen? I just wanted to at least be able to answer that question for them.
Correct.
All right, now we'll move on. Thank you, Gray. Facilities.
Yeah, we've got a few things we'll give updates on. Frank, can you start with a little update on what's going on in the courthouse, because there is some activity this month.
Yeah, you'll see on the outside of the courthouse, we just started last week, starting to remove some parts of the old landscaping, the old field stones that we had as an etching. They look great when they're brand new, but after a year, they get really dingy and dirty. The only way to clean them is by power washing them, and you clear up landscaping by doing that. So we're going to go with the modern edging on that. But we're utilizing, instead of sending this out, we're trying to utilize as much of Kenosha County resources as possible, such as the Kenosha County Parks Department, which is going to be helping us out with some of the demolition and taking out the existing landscaping. We're utilizing some work crew personnel, actually stacking up those stones, those edging stones, and putting on pallets that are already gone. That's also with our maintenance department, facilities department overseeing them. So we're utilizing all these Kenosha County resources, like I said, with the work crew, with facilities, parks department, and the highway department. So we can get a lot of these things done internally and not have to send them out and cost in extra money. So it's going to take a little longer doing that, but we have the time span to do it. So.
Well, John said that they're going to take that stone out to the parks department.
Correct. Oh, it's being reused. It's not right. Being thrown out. Yeah. I think it's already in their barn out at Pat's.
Yeah.
He said they're going to make a retaining wall or something out of it.
And the work crew knows their way around the courthouse.
Yeah, they do.
Funny.
So that's going well. Like I said, it's going to take... We have the time to do it because of landscaping going into the summer, but we wanted to get these activities going because parks is really going to be ramping up here in a few weeks. So this was their time to utilize them to get this going. We'll cordon it off with snow fencing as we work our way through the summer with the landscape. Any questions?
No, and maybe we would want to take this a little out of order here and do C and D and then go back to B, because I think B is going to be the big one, isn't it, Ray?
Yeah, that's the one that's got the most. The Brookside Health Facility Survey, that is a brief update. As told the committee last month, continue to work with C.G. Schmidt. Actually, we're able to make contact with A2K as the architectural firm that's swallowed basically the old firm that originally did the building design, and talked to a structural engineer, engineering firm that was involved in the original building. And bottom line is, it appears that everything that we need to address above the ceiling is still on track to get that all done. We just have to lay out an actual construction timeline for that activity to take place going into the spring of the year. And the area that there's a question still out on is in terms of the drywall issues above the acoustic ceiling throughout the facility, what exactly we are going to have to do with that in terms of taping off joints and mudding over screws that have been that way since the facility was opened in 95. We've had a couple meetings since our last meeting. We haven't quite got our hands around that one yet, but that one, the clock is not ticking on. So we're going to take our time and try to get as many other people to belly up to the bar as opposed to us doing that, even though the statute of limitations for that work ran out 10 years ago, 9, 10 years ago. So that's pretty much an update on what's going on at Brookside. Last one, safety building, energy utilization. Hopefully this month there was a spreadsheet in the
packet.
And basically that was a whole year. To put things in context, we moved into the new part of the building, the addition, in actually September of 10. So this was actually a full year of utilization of the addition. The remodeling was still going on in some of the KPD and Joint Services area of the old building in early last year, but that was still substantially occupied by March of last year. So the numbers here, really 10 to 11, are pretty accurate as far as that full 215,000 square feet being used. So I think that the numbers show that they're, in terms of what we attempted to do, it's definitely having a positive impact. On a per square foot basis, which Supervisor Grady had asked for the last time we looked at this report, that really was a telling statistic that there, we've made some, as an overall, the building is much more efficient now with that addition on, and with the retrofit work we did on the old building, Even though there's still more to do, we've made it, definitely made a dent in things. Our kilowatt per hour usage has gone down. Gas terms used per square foot have dropped. So it was good stuff. It was good stuff.
Thank you for this. I think it's important to have this brought forward, at least on a semi-regular basis. We do it, I don't know what your pleasure is, down as quarterly or once or twice a year, but to just kind of keep tabs on how this has been affecting. The thing about the gas, though, that's just raw therms. There's no seasonal compensation for degree days or anything.
Correct. I just took, I basically just took the information right off the utility bills. Yeah.
Good report, thank you.
Ray, what would be your pleasure as far as could you put this together? Would you?
We can do it and include it as a report. It's not, it's really no big deal administratively the way we got things set up now to put it together.
Like quarterly?
Quarterly would be fine.
Okay. Now we'll go to the towers.
The towers, yeah. What I attempted to do there is basically summarize, now three. I got the third report, the Silver Lake Tower report, actually on Friday. So I've got all three of them. They're anywhere from 25 to 35 pages long. If you guys want copies of them, they give them some more detail. But I tried to summarize it here with kind of the bottom line, what's going on. The 60th Street Tower is first, and that is the one that is of most concern. Based on the report, as well as some follow-up discussions with the structural engineer, the firm that climbed the tower, and our kind of radio consultant guy, this really is a summary of what's going on. The bottom line is that the tower itself hasn't had any significant that anybody can find. We went through all the old archive files here, downtown, as well as the sheriff's department, because when those of you that remember Chief Deputy Schoenfeld, when he was alive, he really was in charge of the towers. And then after he retired, they kind of went to facilities, but there was never really a clear who was in charge of it anymore. When Roger was here, Roger was in charge of the towers, and there was no question. So these things kind of didn't have a real strong advocate for them for a number of years. And they weren't, I don't know that they were managed as closely as they were when Roger was around. In any event, the tower as it exists right now is not in danger of falling over today. Although Friday, when we had the snowstorm, and it was very heavy snow that accumulated, one of the tests that they do for these things is three quarters of an inch radially around, basically encasing the tower, which is something that could happen, but is fairly remote, and 45-mile-an-hour winds would put that tower at risk. There's no doubt about it, based on conversations with the engineer. Now, those specific conditions exist very rarely. He wasn't willing to necessarily say it's a 100-year event or a 50-year event. The bottom line is we have time to put together a plan so that we can address this in the 2013 budget. I was able to get him to put that in writing. Which is something that I want after having a lengthy conversation with him. I mean, we could have a three quarters of an inch next weekend and a 50-mile-an-hour wind. There's no guarantee that that's not going to happen, but statistically, the odds of that happening are still fairly rare. We need to address that tower, and given the plot of land that it's on, 0.16 of an acre, it's an L-shaped lot. It's the probabilities of us being able to reconstruct that tower on that site are very small, very small. So we're going to have to look for some alternatives based on topography, based on a number of factors, and that's what is going to take probably 4 to 6 months to pull all that information together and make some recommendations as to where would be the best place to relocate what's on that tower. That's definitely the ugliest one in the portfolio, the 60th Street Tower. And like I say, I've got copies of those reports. If anyone wants the full report, I can certainly get you the full copy. But that, pretty much what you see on page one there is a pretty good summary of exactly where we're at with that tower. Now, the one that was a surprise is the 45 and 50 tower. So that one's only been up since 1993. It's in good shape. It's in very good shape. It's just that, again, a lot of what's happened over the years, because there wasn't any one entity in charge of the towers, when people wanted to put up something, whether it was the KPD, Sheriff's Department, County Fire, City Fire, there isn't necessarily anybody as a gatekeeper. We've changed that now, but there wasn't for a lot of years. So the load that's on that 45 or 50 tower, it's pretty much at its max. It's not in any risk of falling over in any of the load tests that they do with 90-mile-an-hour winds, like tornado-type winds in the summertime, or 45-mile-an-hour winds in the wintertime with ice encasement. But by the same token, we're not really able to add anything else to that tower in its current condition. So they identify a couple of things. The good thing is the way that that tower is designed, there are some things you can do to it to increase its load's capacity. There's one recommendation that the coax ladder, basically that thing that runs all the wires all the way up to all the antennas up there, that should really be moved to a different leg of the tower to balance things, and that's going to give us a lot, just as it stands, it's going to be in a lot better shape. Going forward, there's some things that we can do to actually add some bracing to that tower to increase its load capacity. And I lay out there that, you know, the first thing we probably should do in the 2013 budget is to get a number for moving that coax ladder and just get that done. We should also get a cost for adding some of the structural bracing, because sometimes you have these guys out, it's better to mobilize once, and maybe cheaper to do it all at one time, or maybe not. If we don't have plans to put anything on that tower for another 3, 4, 5 years, maybe we just deal with strengthening it when we actually are going to be putting something up there. So that's the 45 and 50 tower. The County B tower is actually the one, even though the age is unknown on that thing, at least we were unable to, going through all the archives, couldn't find anything. It's 201 feet tall. It's the shortest one. It's kind of the stubbiest one. The load that's on there is, it's completely safe with what it's got on there. There is, I know, a couple of things that the 4.9 megahertz project, if you've heard of that, for the Sheriff's Department, they do need to add some stuff, and it appears it's actually going to be able to safely accommodate that additional load. I just had a phone conversation today about that. And then it'll pretty much be maxed out, and there wouldn't be, from a design standpoint, anything we could do to that tower to strengthen it more going forward. But its bottom line is it can support what it's got on it now and can even accommodate this immediate stuff we need to put on for the 4.9. So it's really in pretty good shape. That's pretty much it.
So what we're going to be doing is looking at our options on the biggest problem that we've got, the 60th Street, and then just get some estimates on the one out here for moving that...
that coax ladder.
Right, and that might take care of immediate concerns with that.
Yep.
All right, so we can... Any questions on any of that? Supervisor Grady?
1545, are there redundant things on there that could be condensed into one, removed?
Yeah, there's something, that's something that we did actually down at the safety building when we took a bunch of stuff off that lattice tower in the center of the roof there and moved it onto the monopole. By putting some stuff in the radio equipment room, you can get, if you have like 10 antennas, I learned this, depending on what you do in the back room, you can get all 10 of those antennas to play nice with one another and maybe reduce it to 3 antennas. And that isn't what happened over the years because there wasn't any coordination. KPD put up something, the Sheriff's Department put up something, another agency put up their stuff. Inevitably, there'd be interference, so then they'd have to add more stuff to their stuff to get it to work. And the bottom line is, yes, we should be able to... It's possible by adding equipment in the room itself, you can reduce the load of the individual antennas up above.
Thank you.
Anything else? All right, then we'll move on. The air handling project.
Frank's going to take this one off.
That was the handout I just had given. That the front page is actually the specification for the HVAC bid at Brookside. The second page is the actual bids that came in, broken down by vendor, and the winning bid was just service, who the county's talking to different maintenance people have had very good service through. So the scope of work, really, we had the building analyzed by HVAC engineer Tim Pan at Southport Engineering. engineering because last year when we were alerted that the 30-ton unit was not operating correctly, it was a 30-ton rooftop unit. And actually, if you look at item number 3, it says remove and replace. It says 40-ton rooftop unit number 3. I've got to correct that. That's the current unit that's in there. I'm sorry. That's the we're replacing a 40-ton for a 40-ton unit. The actual number 2 is replace and remove 60-ton unit with a 70-ton unit. When we analyzed, we had to analyze all of Brookside because they were putting water over the coils and over the compressors when it got above 90 degrees there because the AC just couldn't keep up. And that was the way it was from day one when they opened back in 1995. Unfortunately, for whatever reason, it was brought up to the power that be at the time, but it wasn't correct. So, having said that, we want to do it correctly this time. So we analyzed the units. It turned out we need to bump this up from a 60 to 70 ton in that particular case. There's 2 more rooftop units we'll be doing next year. One of those is going from a 40 to a 50 ton, more than likely. The other ones are sized correctly. But we have, number 1 is a 30-ton air-cooled condensing unit that is serving the kitchen. That's being replaced with another 30-ton unit. That one has got a third of the coil cut out of it. They've been looking that along. The second one was we're going from the 60 to 70-ton. And the third one was the 40-ton that's being replaced by another 40-ton. And the fourth point was we found some ductwork that was not completed correctly. Some of it was not done for the drawings, but long and short of it, we had air going into like the dining room, but not enough return coming back out. So it was not heating and cooling correctly. So through this, we had an overall analysis of Brookside done all the way down to how the ductwork was, and we figured out what the deficiencies were, and this is the first step in correcting it with this bid. Second step will be next year.
Was this all within our budget?
Well, yes. Yes. It was $209,000. We did borrow from, we have kind of an overall HVAC account.
This one, there's one account that's set up for HVAC replacement. And I can't remember the total dollar amount in that account. It's less than this because we're hoping to get some work done at the detention center as well.
Yeah.
So this is, we had estimated this originally at $200,000, this work.
So we're
came
close.
In at $209,000, so we're pretty close. We are, though, trying to do, as Frank outlined, because there is so many deficiencies, specifically on the HVAC side. If you talk to people at Brookside, either residents or people that work there, there's a number of issues with HVAC out there, in the dining room especially, as well as some of the resident rooms. So when we're going in, we're looking at this to try to correct if we can. If stuff was sized wrong, or as Frank indicated, they determined there was more air being pushed in than air coming back, things weren't balanced properly, we're trying to correct those things so we really get things straightened out as part of these. Really, these are at the end of their life cycle. They're 18 years old. They're all at the end of their life cycle as we replace them. We're still trying to correct and make things work better, too, if we can. So that's what we're trying to do.
As part of this, this was the long lead time item, was to get these on order, and we're just having a meeting with purchasing and the contractor next week, so we got this in the hopper. The other part of this is the control system they had, the old train control system, which was analog and pneumatic, burned out a board, and they really can't adjust and do readings from the control room anymore. It was going to cost $15,000 just to replace that board and bring it up, whereas Ray's been brought on digital controls. The first level of that was with the security system throughout the county, and that backbone in place, we can add on the HVAC system with that backbone. So therefore, we're working with the controls people to change this facility to digital controls.
So we're going to work with focus on energy, and timing wise, when are you figuring we're going to start that work roughly?
We'll have it. We want to hit a cooler week in there, but it'll all be done before June 1st.
Okay. Anything else then, Frank? Ready? No. We'll look for a motion adjourned.
So
moved by Supervisor Esposito, seconded by Supervisor O'Day. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? You and others?
Aye.
We're adjourned. Thank you all. Just prepare yourself. We're going to be in trouble.
Oh, yeah.